This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From North, South, East, and West, North America, Japan, and back again, this is your home for modern-day wrestling. With the occasional trip back in time, it's Place to Be Nation's main event. Now let's head into Studio B with your host, Scott Criscolo, and the godfather, Nate Milton.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to your home for everything modern-day wrestling, here, there, and all over the ball of mud called Earth. Regardless of who owns your TV network or what your time slot is or who owes you money, et cetera, et cetera. Place to Be Nation's main event. I am your tri-host, Scott Criscolo. We have got a great show tonight. It's actually a WWE pay-per-view we'll be discussing tonight. And we have some other news and notes as well. But of course, everybody will be descending upon Charlotte. Not the actual person. We don't want to say many are descending on Charlotte. That would be uncouth. But the city of Charlotte on Sunday for Clash of Champions. It is WWE's weekend. Since the last time we were on, it was AEW's weekend. And speaking of AEW, one of our hosts actually was in Chicago. We won't go too deep into it because Nate and I went so deep in the recap show, we haven't found our way out yet. Why don't I bring him in? The Godfather, Nate Milton.
I still have biscuit grease from the Cracker Battle. Cracker Barrel Battle Royal all over me, Scotty.
We got one barrel left for Steve Willis.
One barrel left for Steve. But yes, I'm glad to be here on episode 33, a number worn by such luminaries as Danny Granger. I think that's the first person that pops into mind.
Oh, really?
When you hear number 33, like, whatever happened to Danny Granger?
Danny Granger.
But no, of course. We there's two that come to my mind first and foremost, and it's fitting that they were on opposite teams that had such a deep rivalry in the NBA, Scotty. Of course, number one is Larry Bird, who secretly was a black Muslim named Mustafa Shakur. That's a deep cut from an old 90s sitcom called Rock that I don't think many of the listeners ever watched. But basically, Rock was like the black version of All in the Family. So instead of like Archie, who's got these kind of closeted, bigoted ways, the grandfather on Rock was just like super Black Panther militant. And he's like, Larry, ain't no way Larry Bird could have been white. He played so good. He was secretly a Muslim brother named Mustafa Shakur who went to Indiana. I'm like, okay. And then the other one, of course, would be Lou Alcindor, a.k.a. the captain, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Absolutely, of course. Power Memorial High in Manhattan. And, of course, 4 years at UCLA. Beat the varsity team when he was a freshman, who, by the way, were the defending national champions. And then the next 3 years, I think they lost zero games, and he won three national championships. Probably the greatest college career you could ever have.
Make the argument he's the greatest big man of all time.
There's plenty. Another big man who wore 33. Not, in fact, this big man wore 33 for multiple teams, and he will also be mentioned in our next episode, 134, because he wore 34 for my team. We're talking about, God, Jesus, how many nicknames? Steel, Diesel, what was it? Hot Aristotle? No, Black Aristotle?
The Big Aristotle.
The Big Aristotle. Of course, we're talking about Shaquille O'Neal, who wore 33 in college.
Yeah,
of course,
he was 32 last episode. 33 yep. This week, and he'll be on next week.
He'll be on next week as well.
Or next episode.
Next episode. This is, of course, episode 133. I got a shit ton of other 33s. Scottie Pippen. Why don't we bring this guy in? Because Scottie Pippen was one of his guys. The conscience of Place to Be Nation, Mr. Steve Willie.
Yeah, Scottie Pippen, number 33, also known as the biggest perpetrator on 33 violence. If you remember Scottie Pippen dunking over your guy,
yes,
Patrick Ewing.
Mm. Yes.
Very famous dunk.
Very famous dunk. Yes, you are correct.
But I have a lot of love for Patrick Ewing, so no disrespect there.
Another 33.
Pretty cool.
Yep.
In fact, the greatest 33 in the history of the Big East Conference, because he's the greatest player in the history of the Big East Conference.
And a current coach in the Big East Conference.
And a current coach coaching his alma mater, of course, Georgetown University. Hopefully a good year coming up.
Thanks for having me on. I'm giving you a virtual Bash Brother forearm to each of you, just like Jose Canseco.
Also War 33, correct? My God.
Have you seen the Lonely Island deal on Netflix yet, Steve Willie?
No, I have not.
Okay. It's not great. I'm going to start off the top by saying it's not great, but it's amusing. Andy Samberg and the Lonely Island guys did like a musical. They call it a visual poem. It's like a 30-minute series of music videos called the Unauthorized Bash Brothers Biography. And it's Jose Canseco and Mark McGuire just rapping about various things that happened in Oakland in the 90s.
It's awesome.
And they've got like one like kind of love song called Oakland Nights. And Sia, the singer, does the hook. But, of course, Sia's not going to be in the video because Sia is a serious musician. So, instead, they have Sterling K. Brown dressed as Sia lip-syncing to her vocals in the video.
That's great.
I thought you were doing the end of the show. Can I go home now?
Instead of watching TNA, let's just watch the Bash Brothers.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, my God. Love Jose. Love Ozzy, too. I don't know what number he wore because nobody cared.
Had a Madison Muskies baseball hat, which is where Ozzy played for most of his career. It used to be an A's affiliate. Doesn't exist anymore. But a neighbor who would travel a lot for business. So when Jose and Mark were the big thing, she brought me back a Madison Muskie baseball cap. And it looks just like you can imagine. That's Muskie with A's colors.
Did you play for them? You should have played for them, Steve. There should be a jersey, the Muskies. You're the hot shooting Muskie.
I did have a jersey of another 33. Famous Duke alumni.
Grant Hill.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
You clearly have better ankles than him, though.
Yes. That was sad.
It was very sad. I
he still had a decent career, though.
Oh, no, he absolutely did. Of course he did.
Very long career.
Yeah, absolutely.
20 years. Good Lord.
Yeah.
94 to 2013.
Yeah. Of course, I have a 33 hanging in my closet. I wore it on Friday. I always wear his jersey the Friday before week one of the NFL season, and that is, of course, TD himself. Heisman Trophy winner and Super Bowl champion Tony Dorsett, my favorite Cowboy of all time. Christ, there's so many more. Good grief!
I thought you were going to say Piazza.
No, Piazza wore 31. We did that two episodes ago. Did he wear 33 anywhere else? No. There's a ton more 33s.
Oh, with the Padres. Okay.
Did he wear 33 with the Padres?
Yep.
Oh shit!
Interesting. Oh yes, the lost years.
Yeah. Last year. Is that when Maddox wore 31 for the Padres? Maybe that's why. Maybe that's why he wore 31.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's probably a ton that we're missing, but there's 33s up the wazoo. Chara? No, Chara's not 33. Is it Dano Chara 33? Why am I blanking?
I thought you said Chara. I was like, she's way bigger than 33, Scott.
Yeah, I know. She's a Chara, too. Boom, chicka boom, boom, chicka boom.
He is 33. Okay, I was right. He is number 33. Okay, good.
Yeah, Charles, no, she was like a
33Z. anyway, plenty of other 33s throughout the history of the NFL. Well, we talked about Marcus Allen. He was 33. No, we already established this. Charles White was 33 at USC. Anyway, tons of 33s. All around the board. Tons of 33s in the NBA that we're missing. But in any event, it is episode 133, and we got a lot to talk about, guys. Of course, in the B block, it is time for our newest installment of the classic TNA pay-per-view recap. We'll go back to October 30th of 2002. And speaking of the NBA, guys, you'll have to guess who was on the cover of SI that week. We'll do that in the B block. But first, before we go any further, and we have to talk about, of course, Clash of Champions, which is this Sunday in Charlotte. Mr. Willie, while Nate and I were trying to swim through the imbibing that was myself, Mrs. Smith and Mr. Capel before we were swimming through to get out of the awesome recap show that was AEW's All Out. You were actually there at the Sears Center, my friend.
Yeah, I took the Fox River and the Des Plaines River filled with vodka, apparently. to get there. Yeah, I went to All Out. I went to the Jim Lynham tournament in Chicago for the third year in a row. They lined it up with AEW, so they were able to get like Pentagon and Phoenix in there, which was kind of cool. But yeah, I really had a good time. We did like a little tour package because the tickets sold out, of course, right away. That gave us like our hotel room, gave us a shuttle to and from the event, and also like some cheap appetizers, and we got to go in early, which was nice. We didn't have to wait into the giant SummerSlam line that we went into in Brooklyn a few times, Scott, when everyone was getting into one exit, thousands of people. Ugh. And then we just got to go in the side. It was just like that. And we got to go in earlier. So it was a nice little setup. It was a decent arena, you know, right in my hometown. I got to do, if you saw my Instagram or Facebook page, I got to meet Dynam Dallas Page and do a DDP yoga workout with him and talk to him for a couple minutes. He, in the best worker moment of the weekend, he claimed he knew me from social media. Just obviously... obviously working it. I don't know what he expected to get out of that, but yes, DDP, you saw me doing yoga on that one picture.
I mean, he could have been trying to, you know, form a new lane for the DDP yoga brand, Steve,
there
where
you
do yoga and get therapy at the same time
and do podcasts on Pleased to Be Nation.
Precisely.
Go over 2002 TNA
because multiple revenue streams.
Yeah. Apparently, they talked about him a lot in 2002 TNA for some apparent reason that I don't know. it was a really fun weekend.
Good.
I enjoyed the show. I haven't been able to listen to the recap yet because I've been, drowning in other stuff.
You'll get it's still there. Plus, it's weighing down.
Yeah, my phone is still like smelling like tequila and bad decisions.
yes.
So lots of blood and Arn Anderson's.
Oh my God! I swear to God, one of the biggest pops I've heard in years.
It was fucking great! It was awesome.
Anderson came out and
awesome.
It's fun for me because a lot of my friends refer to my father as the enforcer because they have a very similar look. And now that Arn Anderson is probably pushing 300 pounds, they have even a more similar look. But just a huge pop for that moment. I think another surprise there was how good a reaction that Nyla Rose got throughout the entire Battle Royal. And then the huge pop from Mercedes Martinez, which that was a shocker to me. Like, yeah. I knew she wrestled in the Shimmers in Chicago. So she's wrestled at almost all those. But if you would have told me that Mercedes Martinez was going to get a huge pop, one of the biggest of the night. And then the ladder match was insane. Just as insane in person as it was when I look back at some of the highlights. You know, we thought Nick died on the spot at the end when he was supposed to go through both tables and his legs got caught in the ropes.
Yep.
And then the destroyer off the top of the ladder was incredible.
Do you consider that, though, like Meltzer said, but I think he's, you know, bad hair, bad skin as a putz. But do you consider that the greatest ladder match of all time?
It's not. My opinion, it's not. I think he's just saying that to be a dick. I don't think it is.
I think that I'd have to go back. You're going to be hard-pressed to, just for the historical value and how creative it was, those Edge, Christian Hardys, and Dudley Boy matches were just absolutely groundbreaking. I do think that this was incredible and that they broke out. I mean, they pulled everything out of their ass on that one. I'm glad that everyone was safe. We saw a match the day before between Pentagon, Phoenix, and LAX, which is, you know, like in front of 400, 450 people, and they just fought all over the place. It was like their swan song in this company. Mm-hmm. And that was quite a bit of fun in itself and fairly close to the ladder match in terms of entertainment. It was just fun in a different way. Like you got Ortiz wearing his Roberto Clemente Puerto Rico jersey. Yeah. You know, battling right behind us and, you know, scared for our lives that there's going to be a 250-pound Pentagon landing on us.
What were your thoughts on Jericho winning?
I thought, I think we all talked about it happening as we got closer. I think it's a smart decision. Paige was not that over. I would say it was like 65-35 in favor of Jericho. There were lots of Jericho signs that were been handing out. And, you know, Jericho played off of it too. We talked at length about needing someone with a name and a look who can do promotion.
But he can't do 26-minute matches anymore, though.
Oh, no. Yeah, that was especially after the ladder match and the Cracker Barrel match, which
so awesome.
Yeah, after I got home, I put a bunch of nails and thumbtacks on the bottom of my kid's skateboard, you know, just in case anybody bugs him.
Well, since he almost hit me with an 89-mile-an-hour fastball, I'm sure he can handle a skateboard full of weapons. So, it was a great show. I have a question for both you guys, though, before we move on. Of course, they did announce the next pay-per-view will be Full Gear, which I'm not a fan.
That's a joke of something that, from being the Elite, I don't know what it refers to.
Of course, it's an inside joke, which TNT better learn to cut the shit on, because they're not going to, that's not going to fly on network, on cable television. Mm-hmm. Enough with the fucking inside jokes, all right? You're not 9 on Snapchat. Grow up. I think that the next show is Full Gear, which will be Saturday night, November 9th, from Baltimore. So they're creeping into WWF territory. Well, a lot of the TV is, but nobody does that anymore anyway. But Conrad is doing yet another StarCast. So my question is, I'm curious, both your guys. I'll start with you, Steve, since you were there. Should they ease up on the StarCasts? Should they just do them for maybe Double or Nothing and All Out and let the other pay-per-views kind of stand on their own? Because after a while, I think it's going to start to get a little tiresome to keep having to book these and plan these. And there's only so many panel topics and everything. What do you think? Should they not do StarCast for all the other stuff and just do it for All Out and Double or Nothing?
If Steve Willey was doing it, I would try to make it a special event so people who realize, hey, this is something to travel to.
Right.
Those people, I mean, I swear, guys, I don't think I told you this offline, but when we were waiting to go in, we had like the little tour package. There were people putting down $500 for a turnbuckle signed by the roster. And we were looking at it, and like some of the autographs were smeared. Most of them, you had no idea who they were. Like, I recognized Pentas. I recognized like Kenny's like K with the Omega symbol. But I was like right next to him. It just looks like a kid scribbled all over
the rest of them are just Alex Marvez trying to impersonate people.
I noticed Riho's, because R-I-H-O, not art. There are people who are coming and spending money.
Right.
So I get what Conrad is doing. He's you know, a little bit of a salesman. He's a little bit of a carny.
And, he's P.T. Barnum.
And he's going to make his money, and he's going to milk it until it runs out.
Yeah, no doubt.
Whereas, like, I would be more like, let's make this special. Let's make it great. Let's, you know, pull out. Let's get our CM Punk, you know, for the Chicago show. Let's get these really special panels that people will come and pay top dollar for. And, you know, that might be able to last longer. But, you know, he feels like he's going to just milk it dry. You can't, you know, maybe if he does like a smaller version.
Mm.
But I think this was 5 days that he was doing it for this next one. Did I hear that correctly? Like a Thursday through Monday or something like that?
Let me take a look. Let me see if they've already booked it. Let me type star. I type left-handed since I have a new layout here. Cast. Oh, wait, it's two R's, right?
Yeah.
StarCast. Let's see. StarCast. Professor Wrestling Fan Convention. According to Wiki, it's November 7th through the 10th.
That's 4 days.
Crown Plot. So it's Thursday to Sunday.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That is a lot.
Around one show.
Mm. Yeah. This is, of course, the fourth one. The first one was All Out Weekend. The All In Weekend, I should say. The second one was Double or Nothing. And the third one was, of course, this past All Out that you were at, Steve. maybe he's giving it a shot for the Baltimore fans. Maybe people that want to drive down. Maybe somebody like me that lives that only lives like what 5 hours away. I don't know. We'll see.
Go to the show. Don't do that.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, that's coming up. All right, I was curious. What do you think, Nate? Do you think that Conrad should ease up?
Yeah, I agree with Steve. I think in a perfect world, you would minimize it to keep it more special and right. also to stretch your audience's dollar. Mm-hmm. But I think the money and the product is so hot right now, like it from a business standpoint. And we know if you know, Conrad is like the white Jay-Z, you know, he's not a businessman. He's a business man. And so, yeah, like I think Conrad's planning the halftime party at the show at the Super Bowl this year. It's like, why is the wrestling boot band playing? This is nobody wants to see you, Terry. Go home. The Hulkster's in heaven, brother.
Oh, God.
I think the money is too good for Conrad as a business person to turn it down. But for the longevity of this thing, I think it would be better if it was spaced out. And you probably did no more than two a year because, mm-hmm. yeah, you can say you're leaving money on the table. But look at something like a San Diego Comic-Con. Which I would say would be kind of something that is equivalent, or at least, you know, that's kind of where Conrad wants to get to. Like, this is the be-all, end-all for these independent wrestling fans.
Sure.
They only do that once a year, and they make boatloads of money.
Yep.
And it's special. And people save up the entire year to make that trip and spend a ton of money while they're out there in San Diego. And I think they could do the same thing with StarCast. You know, maybe do two a year if you want to, but I wouldn't do any more than that because, A, it devalues the thing being special, and, B, as great as these panels are, and, you know, Steve Willey sent me the clip of the Wrestling with Stereotypes 2 panel from this past StarCast. Again, I like that Conrad's bringing in all these different unique people, you know, to come on and talk. But the more of these you do, the less unique these panels will be and the more you're going to have to stretch to get interesting guests.
Yeah, you're going to run out of topics. You know what I mean?
Topics and top guys.
And top guys, you're right. After a while, having Punk show up is, you know.
Well, and that's a once in a, you know, that is not going to happen much.
Right.
He was pretty clear about, hey, I do one autograph signing a year. He's been usually doing the Chicago Comic Con, the C2E2. And so it's like, hey, they came to me. Like, it's, you know, I could literally take the train and, you know, do my couple hours, you know, make a ton of money and go home. And that way I can still see my fans. There's going to be people traveling more for this. So I can see some more fans. And then it's pretty, you know, pretty easy money. I get to see my fans and that's it. Man, I'd do that.
Yeah.
He probably pulled in, like 5 figures, I'm sure, for...
Oh, I'm sure he did. For sitting around and bitching. Yeah.
Yeah. So he seemed a little bit more, at least from... I haven't listened to it, but I've read... not even a recap. I've read, like, just...
People say he's at peace.
Yeah. Like, it sounded okay, and it sounded a little bit more positive. Like, hey, you know, if Triple H called me, like, I'd talk to him. Vince called me, I'd talk to him. Hmm. Hear what they had to say.
I also think I know that Triple H is like, that's the one that might be the only axe that Triple H has yet to grind, apparently. Mm-hmm. So, but Triple H is a more conscious businessman in this environment than Vince is at this point. For fuck's sakes, Vince forgave Jeff Jarrett, and Jeff Jarrett held him up for cash like fucking ransom, like he held Stephanie over, you know. Like Michael Jackson did with his kid. He held Stephanie over the railing with it by his feet, like Suge did with Vanilla Ice. So, you know, and he let him back. So you never say never. But any event, I could easily see Punk telling Vince, you know what? I want to do NXT. I don't want to do the big touring and roster, I'll do NXT.
And they would happily accept him back.
And they would happily accept him. And boy, would AEW be fucked. But any event. We are close to the TV war, and we talked about it a lot. And I think our next episode, guys, 134, I believe will be the week before AEW debuts.
Cool.
So So by the time we talk again after this evening, the NXT show on Wednesday nights will be a couple weeks old.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently for the first 2 weeks, the 18th and the 25th, hour one will be on USA and hour two will be on the network.
People think that's not at all confusing.
People think that's weird, but are you for real? Sorry, we just broke the fourth wall. okay. Oh, fuck. I hope nobody has him on their team. A lot of people think that's stupid, but there's no competition, so who gives a shit? Whatever. As long as they're two hours.
Just trying to get it out, you know, yeah. Just like get a head start on it.
Yeah. As long as they're 2 hours on the second, I think they're fine.
Yeah, I'll just watch it, the NXT show, when I get to it.
Yeah.
They've already established that there's no reason to watch it live.
Yeah, that to me is the only detriment in that planning is that it makes something. Again, we talked about it on the All Out recap show, Scotty, where the big issue with NXT is that they haven't made an appointment viewing for the fans out there. You know, it's something that, yes, it's a good show and you'll watch it, but you don't have to watch it this day, this time. And right. I think doing this makes it even, you know, it kind of reinforces that in that, yeah, it's on USA, but you know, you can catch the second hour here on the network. So it's not drawing me to USA and saying you gotta stay here and watch these damn commercials and pay USA their money for these 2 hours.
Right. We'll get more into the TV on our next show because we'll literally be on the eve of it. So we'll definitely we'll do a deep dive into talking about the two networks together or the two things together. Because my other question is, and again, we don't need to go deep into this tonight. We can wait for a couple weeks, but what if TNT decides they want to do what they did in the Nitro era and re-air AEW at 10 o'clock?
I think it'd be a smart move.
It would be a smart move, but it also kills the 8 to 10 thing. Because now I could watch either, and who gives a shit from 8 to 10? You know what I mean? So who knows? Again, we'll dive more into this in a couple weeks on our next episode because we'll be 1 week away from it, so we'll be a lot closer. But would you go again, Steve?
Yeah, I would. I'm not going to the TV. I've, in general, stopped going to TV tapings and the like just because they can get to be boring.
Right.
It's also quite a trip.
You know, are they doing a TV episode in Chicago?
Yeah, they're doing the day before Thanksgiving.
Ah, that's right.
So I have a friend going, and I'm like, and the tickets are actually really reasonable. They have, like, you know, they're just like WWE. They're ridiculous first couple row prices that people are going to pay no matter what. But I think they're like go down to $25.
Oh, wow.
Which is and it's a, like a 11,000 seat arena.
So. Yeah, most of the buildings so far, except for the opening night, October 2nd, they're actually playing. They're actually wrestling at the Capital One Arena in D.C., home of the Hoyas and the Caps and the Bullets. I mean, Wizards. I miss the Bullets. And then every week after that, they're in a big city, but they're not in a big building. Like the following week, they're in Boston, but they're at the Aganis Arena, which is the that's where BU plays hockey. And then the following week, Philly, they're at the Lyakuris Center, which is actually where Temple plays.
Yeah.
So the venues after that are all between like 8,000 and 10,000. Like I would
college
love to
basketball.
Yeah, college hoops. They would be at they wouldn't go to the Bradley Center. I don't know if they go to the new place. Does Marquette have an on campus? I don't know.
They
where
play
the,
at the
where
they
the women play, Steve?
They have their own place.
Yeah, maybe they'll the women go.
Yeah. And just to like shut up the doubters who beforehand were like, oh, it's all ticket brokers. The place was legit sold out. There was like a few seats that were open, like literally like 10. And then like just like WWE where the hard cameras are, they keep those seats open so they can get a, you know, you don't have people standing in front of the camera.
Right.
But it was a legit sellout. So. You know, maybe people got their seats cheaper, but it's not like, you know, 10,000 seats were bought out by bots. People bought the tickets.
Of course.
To think that it's AEW or WWE or somehow the only people that have bots selling, you know, buying up tickets is absurd.
It is absurd. I agree. Let's talk about this little news tidbit before we do our preview of Sunday. It has come out that Anthem Entertainment, who owns Impact Wrestling, of which I enjoyed their fine app today, or actually it was a desktop browser, but I enjoyed their app, is going to buy Access TV and HDNet not that anybody gives a fuck about HDNet or whatever the fuck it's called now. But buying Access TV means two things, of course, guys. Number one, Impact will be going to a new home, which will be good for them. But number two, that obviously means bye-bye New Japan Pro Wrestling. Because apparently they hate each other. I think a lot of it has to do with – I mean, sure, there's some money issues. I think a lot of it also has to do with a certain guy who is the IWGP heavyweight champion, who's also the greatest fucking wrestler in the fucking world, being used for cheap parlor tricks in TNA in 2000 – whenever the fuck he was there. What was he there? 2005? Six? When was Okada in – didn't we look it up? What was it, like 05, 06? Can't wait till we get to those shows. I don't think he was even on a pay-per-view, though. I think he might have been on like a throwaway Impact.
No.
Or whatever the fuck it was. Anyway, this is a big deal, guys. This is just as big a deal as anything involving AEW or WWE because Impact keeps breathing. We sit here and we make fun of these 202 shows, although the one we do in the B block, we won't be making fun of a ton. But – this is big. Impact keeps breathing. Every time we think another organ failed, it's like Jason X. He gets the adamantium hockey mask. Somehow, they find a fucking way. How is this happening, Nate? How is this happening? How are they still breathing?
It's like Jeff Jarrett said once upon a time, they said it wouldn't last. Ha ha. But yeah, this is a big deal because I heard the rumors about Impact moving the show to Access. And so I thought, you know, that's obviously a smart move. They've got New Japan. They've got some MMA on that channel. They've got, you know, the WOW, the Women of Wrestling. So it fits with, you know, what they're trying to cultivate on that channel. But then to find out that Anthem has actually gone in and partnered with Mark Cuban and partnered with Steve Harvey, which makes this story even crazier.
I waited for you to bring that up because I knew you'd love it.
So we got Mark Cuban, Steve Harvey, and I forget the guy that's in charge of Anthem that killed the law. No shade. but it's a big deal because not only does it put Impact on a channel where not only are they going to get more eyeballs than they are currently on the Pursuit Network, but it's a situation where they have kind of the pole position, the prime position out of all the shows because they're made in-house, they're the cheapest to kind of put on whenever they want to. So I could easily see a situation where, and you know, this is kind of looking ahead to when would be the best time to put Impact on Access. I'd put them on Tuesday night. The Tuesday night that is the first one after SmackDown moves. Mm-hmm. I'd put them on Tuesday, and then I'd have them on again on Saturday night. Do the replay Saturday night where they've also got like a MMA, they got the women wrestling, and for now they got New Japan on that Saturday night. So I would have one show where it's in a time slot where wrestling fans have been conditioned through SmackDown on USA to tune in on Tuesday night and then replay it again Saturday with the rest of your kind of sports entertainment, combat sports block. But no, this is a big deal. This is good news for TNA, good news for Impact. Anybody that's followed the promotion over the years. Most importantly, though, like we talk about with AEW, anytime you have a company that is doing better and they've got TV, it's good for the business and it's good for the workers and it's good for the fans, especially in an era where, and I hate to disparage the good people over at Ring of Honor because there are a lot of talented people on that roster. Ring of Honor has fallen in the last year or so in terms of public perception to the point where Impact might even be a more valued commodity than ROH right now.
I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you at all.
If Impact, as it seems, will be on Access TV, they will be in more homes, no doubt mm-hmm. about it. Which
Were you talking about Leonard Asper, Nate? Was that what you're talking about?
Or is it Leonard?
Well, he's the president and CEO. There's Ed Nordholm.
Ed Nordholm, that's the guy.
He's the old Ed. Then Peter Einstein is the COO. They own Edge Sport. Their subsidiaries are Edge Sports, Impact, the Game TV Corporation, Fight Media Inc., Fantasy Sports Media Group, Inc. Yep. And now, they actually have it on Wiki, they are majority owner of Access TV and majority owner of HD Net Movies. So.
So my wife will be meeting Mark Cuban next week. Legit. So
is
should
this
going
to own the Mets? Please do.
That's it. Oh, yeah. Does I can have So, yeah, I told her to just talk to Mark Cuban about Japanese wrestling. She's like, I don't know anything. Just here, I'll give you a list.
So what is the future
now,
hold then?
Yeah, oh, now she'll have an opportunity to ask him some questions for us.
Exactly. Yes. What does he do now? I mean, so this is a long-running question, but what does happen now with New Japan Pro Wrestling?
I think they'll stay on the same channel. I honestly do. I don't think it's going to be much of a change for them. They might change time slots or anything like that, but I mean, all they're doing is it's already filmed. They're just basically syndicating it, because it used to be where Jim Ross would do the voiceovers, but they're using the same announcers, using Kevin and Rocky and Chris Shelton. So all they're doing is basically putting the VHS in the player and press and play.
And good point. Collecting a check.
Collecting a check. Yeah.
And also, like, if as long as they can put their pride aside, because, yes, obviously there are still some hurt feelings from not only the treatment of Okada, but also just Impact at that time was woefully inept in terms of their front office.
Mm-hmm.
And Dixie Carter, and, you know, you had Jeff Jarrett and that whole thing with Global Force, and it was just not a cohesive place at that time. And for as much contempt as I have for Ed Nordholm for how he handled Fight Network and all that stuff, I do think that him and Anthem and Scott D'Amore and Don Callis and that group have brought stability to Impact. So you got to give them credit for that. And I think for New Japan, they can't overlook the fact that Access helped them in terms of visibility for a lot of their fans in North America who didn't have access, you know, to New Japan World, or didn't have access to collecting tapes from overseas, or you know, buying the pay-per-views for New Japan. They got a lot of eyeballs, particularly, you know, when Kenny was hot through Access TV. So I don't think they'd want to damage that relationship, regardless of how they might personally feel about Impact.
Right. No, I agree with that too.
I'm a prime example of that, Nate. You know, I did tape trading way back in the day. But when they started on Access, I taped it immediately, and that was what got me into – they started it with, like, the Bullet Club, and that's what got me into it, and then eventually got me to buy the pay-per-view to get New Japan World. And, I've been there ever since, and shoot, I just over the weekend finished watching every single G1 match. It was a long process, but I did it.
You are a sadist, but that was tremendous.
Yeah, over 90 matches, and you know, that's how they got me. So you're absolutely right, Nate.
We'll continue talking about this as time progresses, because obviously this is just in the beginning stages, and we'll see where they move.
Yeah,
because Anthem may want to get a prime time spot for Impact down the line, and they may push Impact to actually be better television wise anyway. I mean, they love their YouTube channel, and they promote a lot of stuff. Well, just like AEW now with their own TV, they don't being the elite and all that crap. They don't need to do that anymore. I mean, they still will, but they don't have to go as crazy. As a matter of fact, if you go to Bleacher Report Live, not only are the pay per views there right now, although I don't know if Double or Nothing's still there. The being the elite episodes that were on YouTube are actually on BR Live.
Oh, that's nice.
I noticed those. Yeah, I noticed those over the weekend, last weekend maybe. All right. Let's move ahead to this coming Sunday night at the home of the Hornets, the Spectrum Center in Charlotte, North Carolina. And that is, of course, talking about Clash of Champions. It's just like – it's the same thing when it was the other pay-per-view, Night of Champions. All the belts are on the line. There is only two matches that do not have belts. Let's do those first, and then we'll go through the matches. We'll go very quickly. This is the last pay-per-view of the old TV schedule. By the time we get to Hell in a Cell, which I'm pretty sure is... Yep. So here's an interesting thing. the Hell in a Cell, which is the next pay-per-view out in Sacramento, is the Sunday after the first Raw on Fox.
Mm.
Big deal. So, interesting. So this is the last pay-per-view of the old way of doing WWE television. There is 12 matches, so I mean, it might be a long night Sunday. there's no chain reaction. The chains are taking the night off, Nate, because they don't want to be up till 3 in the morning again. But by the way, I was honored, of course, to be on the last Chain Reaction podcast. Of course, where we recapped SummerSlam, and I'm assuming it will return in Houston. Not Houston. That's in January. Chicago, right? Is that where Survivor Series is? I believe so.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. So looking forward to seeing that
because
return.
Chicago gets everything.
Yeah, I know. Best city in the world. It's like when they say when Dr. G gets pissed when he hears St. Louis, the best baseball city in America.
Oh, yeah. Whatever.
Fuck off.
They're worst fans.
Exactly. They're garbage. Yeah. Anyway, so this is the last pay-per-view of the pre-Fox era. So this should be a lot of fun. 12 matches, only two of them not title matches. Let's do those quick. We have the finals of the King of the Ring tournament. The Raw half winner is Baron Corbin against the SmackDown half winner, which, believe it or not, guys, and we hate to break the fourth wall, is going on right now because due to scheduling and such, we're actually recording on Tuesday this week. We normally record on Wednesday or Thursday by the time, of course, you hear it on Friday. So actually, that match is happening right now, or at least at some point tonight. I think it's happening at this moment, as to who will be the SmackDown half of the King of the Ring tournament final. Baron Corbin, that schlub, is sitting on the red half of the bracket. Who will be on the blue half of the bracket? So we'll hold off on that. Maybe sometime in the next 8 minutes when the show ends, we'll have a guy. So we'll hold off on that.
Yeah, it is Chad Gable versus unknown since Elias is injured. Yeah. And Shane McMahon has made Kevin Owens the referee, and McMahon wants Kevin to cheat for the person he wants to win. So I am monitoring it as we speak.
All right. So we will keep tabs on what's going on, and we'll hold that match off till the end. The other singles match that doesn't involve a belt, Roman Reigns and Eric Rowan. I think Reigns wins this one comfortably, guys. I think. I don't think there's any question as that whole thing is falling apart. So what do you think of Reigns on SmackDown? Very quickly, guys. He hasn't been involved in any title feuds. I think he's back to kind of being the alpha dog, to be honest. No pun intended. What do you think, Steve? The fact that he's avoided belts, that's what everybody pissed and moaned about for years. Well, he hasn't been in the title picture for quite a while in any capacity. And I think he's doing pretty well. I think he's the fact that he's the face of SmackDown is actually pretty encouraging.
Yeah, I don't mind it. If you can't keep a guy up on top for, 10 years. It was a mistake they made at Cena at times. Mm-hmm. So you bring him back down and you have him, raise someone like Aaron Rowan up. Did I say Aaron Rowan? That is the former White Sox player during the World Series years.
Where have you been?
And then Scotty Podsednik will be in the U.S. Championship match.
Pure speed, baby. X Division.
Yeah.
Your guy Przinski was all over TNA for a few years.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's quite the... Quite the guy, that AJ Brzezinski, the guy who everyone wants him on their team, but no one wants to play against him.
Nicely.
Yeah, but it raises Eric Rowan up, who's done nothing for almost his entire career.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden he's in a, whether you like the angle or not, he's in a high-profile match at a pay-per-view. So, yeah, good on Rowan. Good on Reigns.
Good on Reigns. What do you think, Nate?
Yeah, I think that, there's been a misstep here or there with his return, but for the most part, I think they've done a nice job with the slow boil, not rushing him right back into the title picture, especially with Kofi holding the belt. I don't think they would get the reaction they want from right. Roman challenging Kofi. But yeah, he's in a good spot where he can kind of put some of the younger guys over. And eventually, I think once they get to Fox, sooner rather than later, he'll be the focus of the show again.
Mm. I agree. All right. So the other 10 matches are for the 10 championship belts. We'll begin.
Jeez.
10 belts, right?
Let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, 10.
We have, what, 3 tags. We have the 2 major belts. We have the 2 secondary belts. We have the cruiser. 2 women's belts. We got a ton. Ton of gold, baby. Ton of gold, baby. The gold, the other gold extended. All right. We'll begin with the United States Championship. AJ Styles defending the title against Cedric Alexander, one of my personal favorites. Very quickly around the horn. Steve, who wins and why?
AJ wins due to massive interference because Cedric really doesn't have anyone on his side, but it's going to be a hell of a match. I saw them wrestle in Ring of Honor during AJ's little quick tour between New Japan and WWE, and it was a heck of a match. Mm. So I'm glad that they're letting him do it on pay-per-view for, you know, probably like 15 minutes or whatever.
Okay. Nate?
AJ, and I think that in a perfect world, this would be the situation where we see Ricochet get some backup in the form of the Street Profits.
Hmm. Right. You mean Cedric or?
You mean Cedric.
I mean, they're both lethal.
Yeah.
There's a lot of lethality.
I think Cedric and the Street Profits would be a fun little tandem just because his biggest hindrance from a company perspective is they think he doesn't have personality. And right. The Street Profits are nothing if not personality.
That's true.
Okay. I love Cedric. I've loved Cedric since Ring of Honor. I say that every episode, and I still do. But, yeah, I think AJ retains.
That's going to be a hot match, though. I think it's going to be a good match, and the crowd is going to be, you know, pretty split between the hometown guy and AJ.
Would not be surprised if this opens the show. Would not be surprised. Next, the Women's Tag Team Championship is on the line. Your champions, Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross, to defend against Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. Nate, what do you think?
Alexis and Nikki. I don't think they're going to drop them unless it's to a team that makes sense. And that team might end up being Sasha and Bayley if they want to continue this two-woman power trip.
Loving it. Because the two-man power trip was the greatest thing ever. So, what do you think, Steve?
Ah, the two women power trip swoon.
Yes.
You know, if that didn't happen, if they didn't put Sasha and Bayley together recently, I would have said Mandy and Sonya, just because of the fact that they're an actual tag team that has been around for a while. But I'm going to go Alexa and Nikki. I don't think they wanted them to catch on this way. I thought they were going to do the quick Alexa turn on Nikki as soon as this happened.
Right.
But they've apparently hit some nice camaraderie, and I still want Nikki to be a little bit more psycho like she was on NXT, though, not going to lie.
Did you say psycho-luscious?
No, but I can if you want me to.
I think you should. Yeah. Psycho-luscious.
Psycho-luscious Nikki Cross. Psycho-luscious,
yes. Will Mandy and Sonya kiss? No, I'm only kidding. I don't know if they're going to kiss. I don't know if they were going to try.
That'll be the main event, the segment on the first Fox show.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
And Rupert Murdoch is like, this is not what I ordered. What are they doing? Crikey.
All right. Speaking of Sasha Banks, the Raw Women's Championship. By the way, I think Alexa and Nikki keep it too. The Raw Women's Championship on the line. Becky Lynch defending against Sasha Banks. I believe this is where the man finally loses. Because I think something else happens later in the show, or in another match. But I believe this is where the boss cashes in the bank statement. I believe Sasha Banks will be your new Raw Women's Champion, Steve.
Sure. It makes sense. Sasha's gone for a long time. She comes back. She's angry. Becky has kind of been floundering the last few months. And yeah, sure, why not? I'll go with it.
Okay. Nate?
Yeah, Sasha definitely, because I think it would be a bad look for her to kind of fail in this first tryout, in this new persona. Plus, I think they've got bigger plans for Becky, and her losing the Raw title will allow them to move her to SmackDown for Fox.
I agree.
Your Intercontinental Championship on the line, as I have my Intercontinental belt next to me. Your champion, Shinsuke Nakamura, to defend against The Miz. This might be my hidden gem of the night, Nate. I'm not sure about this. I'm going to listen to your guys' opinions, then I may pick, because I'm kind of up in the air on this one. I'll start with you, Nate. What do you think?
Yeah, it could be pretty decent if they give it enough time. I wish they'd done a better job at kind of telling the story. But I understand when you have guys on two different brands. Not that that means anything these days, but you know they haven't really been able to mix it up, I think, as good as they would have liked to. But I'm going to say The Miz is a better character right now, but I think there's a lot more you can do with Knock as your champ. So I'm going to say they keep it with Knock.
Steve?
We're all agreeing today. I think they're going to keep with Knock too, just because of the new character that they're going with Sammy as his mouthpiece. Mm-hmm. It's pretty fresh. You don't want to just flip that over immediately when you're trying to establish something. So, yeah, I'll go Nakamura too. I like the combo of the two of them.
I do too. I like Knock as well. The SmackDown Tag Team titles on the line, the Blue Belts, The New Day, Big E and Xavier, to defend against The Revival. I feel like this feud's been beaten to death. I think The New Day keep it, but I have a feeling something's going to happen later in the show that hurts this dynamic. But I'll go with you, Steve. What do you think?
This makes my brain hurt, Miss One. Both tag team matches actually make my brain hurt. They've been making Big E and Xavier Woods look like just schlubs ever since Kofi won the belt. Just especially Xavier. So I'm thinking the Revival is going to win for the, I think, what, 27th time?
Yes.
I have nothing against the Revival. I like them, in fact. But
me too.
You couldn't, if you quiz me every week who the tag team champs were, I would get it wrong.
I probably would too. I didn't even realize they still had the belts. Nate, what do you think?
I think the New Day retain, but they get beaten down again at the end of the match.
Hmm. Yeah. Next up, I think New Day retain as well. The Cruiserweight Championship will be on the line. Drew Gulak in a triple threat face Humberto Carrillo and Lince Dorado. I think Gulak keeps it. Carrillo. I like Gulak. He's been a great champion. Nate.
Yeah, no reason to take the belt off him right now.
No, not Steve. At all. Gulak's the winner here. They've been teasing, I think, if I've read right, some dissension between Carrillo trying to get in to the Lucha House Party. So, whatever. These are guys I enjoy. So, I enjoy Gulak. It's going to be fun seeing him try to ground both of the competitors. So, I give you 8 minutes on the pre-show. Away you go.
Yeah, we have. By the way, at this point, since we're a little early in the week, there has been no designation on what the pre-show matches are going to be. So, that probably be one of them. The Raw Tag Team Championship, and this we're putting this one in because this is kind of a premonition, possibly, of what we get later in the show. Your champions. The Universal Champion, Seth Rollins, and Braun Strowman defend against Robert Roode and Dolph Ziggler. They are Wine Cooler Inc. they are Wine Cooler Money, not Beer Money. I think Roode and Ziggler win the titles to kind of get something started on later in the show. This might be the second match of the night after the U.S. title. But I like Roode and Ziggler to be tag team champions. Steve.
Yeah, I think have we picked the same thing for every single match, the three of us?
I think
that's
so.
That's really rare for us.
Yes, it is very rare. It may change.
That seems to be the most obvious thing, right? You have the wacky tag team champions that can't get along together that have to fight later in the show.
Right.
So, yeah, some sort of miscommunication, of course, or maybe Braun nails them on purpose and Dolph and Robert win on a fluke. And, you know, you might even see Seth and Braun just start the next match right away. Hmm.
Ooh, I didn't think of that. What do you think, Nate?
I like that idea by Steve Willey.
Yes.
I think I'd have a lot more faith in Ziggler and Roode if this were a team that were a little bit more established. if we're going by the story, I don't know why this isn't the club. I don't know why we had to have this elaborate tournament to choose the number one contender when the club should have had a rematch.
Right.
But especially, you know, since they're doing all the stuff with AJ and Rollins and Braun, which leads me to believe that they're not done with that. So I think if you want to keep that story going, you have to keep the titles on Seth and Braun. Okay. Because if they lose, then it just becomes a one-on-one thing. But if they keep the belts, then you can still have AJ and the club being these antagonists trying to split this team apart. So, yeah, I go with Rollins and Braun to retain.
Our first split. Okay. I think Rude and Dolph will win. I think they're going to keep it very uniform. Bayley will defend her SmackDown Women's Championship against the host wrestler of this show, Charlotte Flair. I think Bayley retains. You don't turn somebody heel this hot and then have her drop the belt, because I think that's where the whole Bayley Sasha thing starts really kicking in. So I like Bayley to retain, Nate.
I do too, especially because people are still kind of getting into Bayley as a heel, but what will really put her over the top is the reaction from that crowd when she beats Charlotte.
Yep. Yeah, and absolutely.
So I think you definitely have Bayley, because Charlotte can absorb the loss.
Of course, absolutely.
So I think it does more for Bayley to win, and that way at the end of the night you have Sasha and Bayley both holding up the women's titles from each brand.
Yeah, I agree, Steve.
I'm sorry. I was just looking at the results of the King of the Ring qualifier match.
Ah, the final.
And I'm just scratching my eyeball.
Yeah.
We're talking about Bayley. So yeah, I think Bayley's going over for the same reasons that you won't. The same reason as Sasha, you're not going to turn Bayley, a character who's been a face since the day one that she debuted with NXT.
Right.
They're going for something there. And I would think that she's going to win by some sort of screw job. It's still odd to see Charlotte and Becky tagging on Monday Night Raw the other day. So just to give that update, Shane McMahon announced himself as the opponent to Chad Gable, of course. So Owens is the special guest referee. Gable hit a German suplex immediately. Owens made a fast count for a three. So Shane's got on and said it's now a 2 out of 3 falls match. Now Shane's afraid he's going to get, or Kevin's afraid he's going to get fired. But eventually Gable locked on. The ankle lock wins, goes to the finals to take on Baron Corbin. And Shane McMahon is pissed, but Kevin Owens said he couldn't fast count it because McMahon tapped. And then so Shane McMahon, monster heel, jumped Kevin Owens from behind and fired Kevin Owens. And then the fans chanted AEW.
Did the fans really chant?
Yeah, that's what it said.
God.
Yeah, that was pretty ridiculous because it gives away the finish. Because there's no way they were going to put Shane McMahon and Baron Corbin on that show and get them booed out of the building.
Right.
What's funny is the Wikipedia page just pulled that match off the little list here. Somebody's working on it. All right, we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, Baron Corbin against Chad Gable, which I would assume what was going to be the plan anyway, since Baron Corbin versus Elias might have been booed out of the building as well.
Yeah.
Let's see. We were on. We all had Bayley. Did we all pick Bayley? You did too,
yep.
Nate? Yeah,
yep.
We all had Bayley. Yep. All right. I believe we are down to the two big matches, correct? Yes. All right. The WWE Championship. Kofi Kingston to defend against Randy Orton, or as Matt Rotella calls him, Randy Orton. And here I see our other title change of the evening. Randy Orton will add yet another WWE championship to his resume. Steve.
I disagree, and I say Kofi wins, and the only reason I say that is due to the SmackDown starting up. I feel that Kofi would be a little bit of a better representative for these initial, the initial advertising, the starting, and then they can easily move it over to Orton after that is taken care of. Randy Orton just does not scream face of your company. He True. Screams 6 DUI. Mugshot is what he screams.
Coward.
So that's the only reason why. I think Randy Orton will get it. I just don't think it's going to be here. I don't know. I don't know how that's going to happen, if Kofi's just going to win out of a fluke.
Right.
But that is my pick, and it's solely for that thought process that, Kofi might do Ellen instead of Hangman Page.
Yes, Kofi could go on Ellen. Hangman Page can't go on Ellen.
I think I will put that in. I think I will definitely remember to title this episode that.
Kofi can go on Ellen.
And finally, the Universal Championship, Seth Rollins.
Oh, you don't want to hear my opinion, Steve?
I was kind of assuming that you were maybe thinking of your favorite St. Louisan and his XFL team. No, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I think the thing that messes this up from a storytelling standpoint is the Fox debut happens 2 days before the next pay-per-view.
That's what I'm thinking.
And I think if the pay-per-view happened before the Fox debut, I would definitely say Randy Orton wins here. Because then you build up a month to the next show, and Kofi can win going into your debut on Fox. But that's not the way they've got it set up. So the question becomes, if you have Orton beat Kofi here, do you have enough faith in this new Fox audience that you're going to be able to tell this story in one night to get them to the pay-per-view 2 days later?
Right.
I don't know if they can do that. So I hear everything Steve Willey's saying, and I would agree that you want Kofi to be your guy first night on that show. So I guess Kofi retains, but the way I would have set it up is you have the New Day lose to the Revival, New Day beats the Revival, Revival takes out New Day, and then the Revival helps Orton beat Kofi. That way you have a reason for a Hell in a Cell match.
Correct.
Because these guys keep interfering. But the way they've got it set up, they've kind of booked themselves into a corner with the way the Fox data is set up. They could still go with it and just hope that the audience will have enough trust in them that they can follow the story and connect the dots to Hell in a Cell.
Yeah, that's my point. I agree 100%, Nate. I understand what you're saying, Steve, but it's only one episode, even though it is the first episode. I think Kofi can still be the face of SmackDown. Well, first of all, they're not going to promote Kofi as the face of SmackDown. They're going to promote Roman Reigns the face of SmackDown. So regardless whether Kofi has a belt or not, it doesn't really even matter.
If you wanted to use this, because they're going to have the most eyes probably all year on this Fox debut.
Right.
In terms of TV. If you wanted to use that as a big push for Hell in a Cell, you have people all through the night, like they used to do this all the time on wrestling, but they don't do it anymore, where you talk to the locker room and get their opinions on a big match. Mm-hmm. And you could have people giving their opinions on Kofi versus Orton in 2 days. And can Kofi actually get it done? Or was his WrestleMania win a fluke? Is Orton just too good? And you could spend the whole show building that. Like, that could be your main story for the show. We got to see what happens in 2 days. They could even say this is Kofi's last shot to get the belt back, because Orton's not going to give him another rematch after this. And you can mm-hmm. build it up that way. So I hope they would do something like that, Scott. I just don't know. If that's where they're going.
Yeah. Well, again, the Fox spot's a little wonky there, but we'll see. We'll see how they shake it out with Hell in a Cell 2 days later. And finally, the Universal Championship.
Why didn't they just move Hell in a Cell up a week? When they signed the Fox deal, they like, why don't we just make this pay-per-view happen before we debut on Fox?
I know. They could have done it, and they could have moved the date back in like July or freaking June. Yeah.
Or just switched. Do Hell in the Cell now and then do Clash of the Champions later.
Mm-hmm. I know. They had plenty of time to do it. Seth Rollins, Braun Strowman, Universal Championship. After the tag happens, maybe the next match. I think this is a tough one because, once again, do we have Braun lose yet another fucking title match? I say yeah. As much as it bothers me because I like Braun, I think Seth retains. I don't think you take the belt off him one, you know, barely a month after he beats Brock. I like Seth here, Nate.
Yeah, not even like as much difficulty as I had with the last title match. This was easy. Seth Rollins, Braun's not hot enough right now for you to put the belt on him.
Steve?
Yeah, Braun's basically an upper mid-carder that was just raised up to that level in the last month. So, yeah, Seth wins. It feels like they just don't see Braun as a legitimate contender anymore, like they did before.
Yeah, no, I agree.
If anything, I could see maybe AJ gets involved and that's how Rollins gets a fluke win and then you go to a three-way, but that's the only way I see Braun staying in this program.
No, I agree. So we looks like we all agree on two title. Well, most of us agree on two title changes. We all think that Sasha's beating Becky, and I think we all said that. Well, except you, Steve, that Kofi loses to Orton, and except you thought that. I don't think we have any other title changes. No, we don't. So, all right. Well, there's Clash of Champions this Sunday in Charlotte. When we come back, great first segment, guys, as always. When we come back here on the main event, we will go from Charlotte to Nashville and from the Spectrum Center to something that doesn't really have a roof. We go back to 2002 for fun and games and the start of one of my favorite things, tournaments. Who doesn't love tournaments? Brother Nate, Brother Steve, Brother Scott, to Nashville we go after the break.
Because
we gotta sell tickets by the old lady.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place Your Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over two dozen podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceYourNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place Your Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our previous podcasts over the past 8 years, as well by subscribing to our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others available at PlaceMation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using www.placemation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And be sure to join us at our forum at Bigelow34.proboards.com for all sorts of wrestling, sports, and pop culture discussion each and every day, where you can make your voice heard. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceMation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
We are back on episode number 133 of the main event. Godfather, Scotty, the conscience. We are here in the A block. We talked a lot about what's going on with the current world of professional wrestling. But now we're going to switch it up here in this segment. We're going to talk about what happened a long, long time ago. Well, not that long ago, but it seems long in
yes,
the world of in the world of Impact Wrestling. So it's a bit of a switch, you know. So in honor of another great 33, Scotty, the great Eddie Murray, one of the most feared switch hitters in the history of Major League Baseball. We're going to switch it up here in the B block and talk about some TNA. So, before we get to that, I wanted to give a quick plug to the Kings of Sport Patreon, patreon.com/Kings of Sport, where you can check out a lot of content from myself and new father, Marcus Vandenberg.
Ooh, congrats, Marcus.
Shout out to Marcus and his lovely wife and young baby Simba. But yeah, you can check out a bunch of shows. We got MCU reviews, political shows. We got a couple of Royal Rants. The latest episode of the show, which is free on the regular podcast stream, as well as free on Patreon to kind of give people a taste of what we do on the Patreon channel, is my take immediately after the Antonio Brown release from the Raiders. So this is like 30. It was a weird day, Scotty, because it was like 30 minutes after he got released, but an hour and a half before he signed with the Patriots.
Yep.
So the show was like super current when I released it. And then an hour and a half later, it was old news.
And now it's even older. So as we know what happened with Antonio Brown just now. Yep, I am a Patreon sponsor, and I'm very proud of it, and I enjoy a lot of the stuff that is on there, so please check it out. Of course, all the other great shows at placementnation.com. We're not going to go to the live read now. We need to.
I was gonna say, do we have any songs this week?
Oh yeah, why don't we do that? We will at least do the songs. Yes, we will eschew the live read for time purposes. But we of course have great shows on both the Place B Nation Wrestling and Pop feeds all over the place. Let me find the. But of course, what is still going on is the Place to Be Nation Best Song, Greatest Song of the 80s Tournament. That is continuing. Shall we do today's matchups, gentlemen? And we are in the third round. We're getting close. Heavyweights taking on heavyweights. One's taking on 8-9s. Some tough picks here. All right. Living on a Prayer versus Glory Days.
Oof.
I voted for Bon Jovi because we all know my opinions on Bruce.
Was that song associated with one of the Young Guns movies, or is it just a Bon Jovi song?
No, it's just a Bon Jovi song. That was Blaze of Glory. That was like three. That was like 4 years later or something. No, great song.
Never drew first, but I drew first blood.
A great song and a great movie.
I love Young Guns. Both Young Guns are pretty good.
Yes, they were. I like both.
But yeah, I'm with you, Scotty. I'll go with Bon Jovi on this one.
All right, Steve.
I like Glory Days a lot, but it's definitely one of Springsteen's lesser songs, and Living in a Prayer is way more popular, way more famous.
Yeah,
possibly Bon Jovi, if not the top Bon Jovi song.
Yeah. Still haven't found what I'm looking for by U2 versus Sweet Child O' Mine.
It's really hard.
Ooh. This was not even, for me, this was not even close.
I know who you picked.
Yes, not even close.
Yeah.
Even though I love U2, not even close.
Yeah, U2's great, but to me, Sweet Child O' Mine gets it. I mean, like that era of Guns N' Roses is just the peak of that band.
Untouchable, and that you could argue that, or Welcome to the Jungle are the best song on that album. Mm-hmm. Whereas, still, probably what I'm looking for is like the third best song on Joshua Tree.
Well, Sweet Child of Mine was just this weird song that like it's definitely a rock song. It's definitely a Guns N' Roses song, but it was also something your mom would like.
Correct.
So it had a crossover appeal.
Yes, I agree with that. Steve,
my mom did not like Guns N' Roses.
I wish my mom did.
Are you kidding me?
I wish my mom did.
I will be honest here. No doubt about it. Welcome to the Jungle is the better song in terms of its history. Okay. There's no doubt about it. More famous, iconic late 80s rock. Yep. I still voted for the U2 song just so I didn't get blown out. It's a good song. It's a great song. Welcome to the Jungle will win. It should win. But, sometimes you get for the alternative.
You mean Sweet Child?
Sweet Child, yeah. Well, was I saying Welcome to the Jungle?
They both win.
Yeah,
everybody both wins. It's Axl. Everybody wins. Even though he looks like a 95-year-old man now. But I did see them last year at the Garden, and they kicked ass. Or 2 years ago, actually.
Panama versus Mickey.
This also was not even close.
No, not close for me.
Mickey for me. That's more quintessential 80s.
Wow. I'm stunned. Yeah, no, not really. And your point is perfectly right, too.
Like, I love Panama, but if you're talking 80s and that was the decade of the one-hit wonder, maybe Mickey might be one of the most memorable of the one-hit wonders.
That is entirely true.
It is so fine.
It blows my mind.
I mean, yeah, it blew my mind that you took that one instead of Panama, because that is an absolute rocker of a song.
Yep. Yeah, if it was Mickey versus Panama. Jump, you know, it's Jump all the way, but...
Yeah.
Okay.
I picked Panama, but I don't fault you for picking Mickey.
Absolutely.
I can't see the video of Panama in my head. I can see the video of Mickey.
Yeah, exactly. As soon as somebody says Mickey or sings that first verse, you got an image of cheerleaders in blue outfits.
I agree. The only thing I remember about Panama video is Michael Anthony with his Jack Daniels bass guitar, which is fucking awesome. That's the official guitar of the AEW All Out Reaction Show. And finally, Heaven is a Place on Earth by that Utter Smoke Show, Belinda Carlisle, and The Power of Love by Huey Lewis and the News. Mm. This one was a tough one. I had to go with Belinda Carlisle because it's her best song, and she is so goddamn hot in that video. And I know I love like almost every Huey song, so other Huey songs may go further for me, but I picked Belinda here.
Was that Carlisle. One of the ones Prince wrote for her? Or
no, that was
1 year old.
No, that was Manic Monday that Prince wrote.
Yes.
That was the Bangles. Wrong girl band. They're all hot, but yes.
Oh yeah, I definitely pick Belinda. It's a great song.
Ooh.
It really is.
Ooh, baby, do you know? Yes, I know what it's worth.
Anyway,
the only thing that would make me lean Power of Love, I'm gonna go Heaven as well. But the only thing that would make me lean Power of Love is its connection to the Back to the Future movies.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. Although Back in Time, I like, which is, of course, the theme song to one of our awesome podcasts on the Pop Feed, The Year in Pop. So I agree with you, Nate, on that. And Back to the Future kicks ass. I have the set. I'm looking at it right now on my shelf. So keep watching on the Facebook page for the Place to Be Nation Greatest Song of the 80s tournament as we move ahead. We're not going in the 80s for the rest of the segment, guys. We are going back to October 30th, 2002 for episode 18 or 19, whatever. I don't know. It depends on your point of view of NWA/TNA.
What do they have it labeled as on the app?
The app, I think it's 19 because yep. they count the – ProWrestlingHistory.com has it as 18. The app has it as 19 because they count the – that Labor Day or pre-9/11
– Yeah.
X Division thing, but Pro Wrestling History has it at 18. They don't count it. So on the app, it's 19. So we'll go with the app, 19. Gentlemen, you each get one guess. We can move ahead. Who was on the cover of that week's Sports Illustrated? I'll give you a hint. It was the NBA season preview issue.
2002.
Hmm.
So previewing the 2002-03 NBA season. You each get one pick, one guess.
It is just one person.
One person.
One person?
No longer in the league.
I'm going to say 02. I'm going to say Shaq.
No. Steve.
I am going to go... I'm going to channel someone we talked about in the last hour, which was Shinsuke Nakamura, and also to celebrate Kota Ibushi's G1 victory. Yow! Yao Ming.
Steve, you are exactly correct.
No way. I yes. just tried... I went and said, like... who is the draft, and saw Yao Ming, and I'm like, China? That could be
Yao Ming was on the cover of this week's Sports Illustrated as it was the 2002-2003 NBA season preview. So
Known to my 8-year-old as the basketball player with the biggest head of all time.
His head was pretty large. But I don't know if it was his head or if he had just a killer flat top. So yeah, we'll see. Anyway, all right, why don't we dive in and head to Nashville. Let's do our champions recap. Our champion is still Ron the Truth Killings, who I did not – I never remember having the belt this long. Your X Division champion is AJ Styles, who just won it the previous week, and your tag team champions still America's Most Wanted. Steve, paint the picture.
All right. Well, in a first for this company, we start the show with Kid Cash and Mama Luke already in the ring. So they are ready to go, and I loved it. I like the fact that they mixed it up and I wanted to do something different, just a way to keep you on your feet that, you don't know what you're going to get when this starts. So Mama Luke against Kid Cash, a little bit of a contrast in styles. Mama Luke, trained by Dean Malenko, worked more of the ground. Kid Cash, these first few episodes that we've seen him on, has been a lot more flashy, known for doing the Hurricane Ranas and from a lot of different positions. So this one started off a little bit fun for me, but in the middle, it just kind of died. I think I'm spoiled. I think that's what it is that we've seen so many great, amazing car crash X Division opening matches on these shows that Cash wasn't doing these Hurricane Ranas on this. Mama Luke's kind of ground-based. It looks a little sloppy. They both look identical in their costumes to the point where Mike Tenay had to say, okay, well, the easiest way to differentiate these guys, you shouldn't be saying that. You shouldn't be saying that. I did like the end sequence, though, where Mama Luke ended up murdering Kid Cash with a back suplex, or I might have been vice versa. And then Kid Cash did a fisherman buster on his knee, which is a move you'd probably see more in like New Japan in 2019. So it's a very unique maneuver, which we have been seeing in these shows, and then gets a good old fashioned J driller for 3. So I thought, nice intro, terrible middle, great finish.
And this felt like a ECW house match to me. Where, and maybe it's just because both of these guys were in ECW in the dying days. But it felt very much like, we're going to go out there. We're going to do some stuff. We're not going to do too much. We're not going to go too crazy. But we're going to give you a perfectly acceptable match. And I think grading on the curve of NWA TNA, it's a good match. If you put this in the context of, maybe some other company that was hitting on all cylinders, it's a forgettable match. But in the context of this company at this time period, it's a good opener.
I enjoyed it. Your match time was 8:48. I thought it was perfect length.
Yes, I agree with that.
I agree with you, Steve. I like how they just jumped right in and started wrestling instead of, fucking around with garbage Don West opens and all this bullshit, and we get right in. You could tell this was probably the taped half of the day, of the night. So they weren't going to bother, they didn't have enough money to redo fireworks or too many lights or anything. So they just jumped right in with the first match. But I think Kid Cash is obviously establishing himself, and I enjoyed it a lot. But yeah, the middle part, the middle 2 or 3 minutes was a little slow, but it definitely picked up on the back end, and I enjoyed it. So Kid Cash gets the win to move up the X Division ladder, apparently. Steve, what do we got next?
Real quick introduction to the show. Love Don West's silky purple shirt and tie. Went into a quick interview with Scott Hall, the most lucid interview I've ever seen with Scott Hall, ever. Like literally any portion of his career, post-career. Says that he really liked the outlaw spirit of TNA. It kind of drew him to that. Young guys are really busting their ass, and the old guys are having fun with it. So it just seemed like really down to earth Scott Hall. Just said, hey, I'm gonna, truth is really good. I'm better than him. Okay, that's a typical wrestler brag, but I liked it. I really like seeing this side of him.
Then, that was really good. And Mike Tenay was really good as kind of the interviewer.
Yeah, I would agree. Like, they had that one with X-Pac, or God, I'm doing it again, Six-Pac a couple weeks ago, and Six-Pac was just kind of rambling.
Mm-hmm.
Hennig was okay in his last week. But this one, it seemed like, hey, we're just two dudes sitting down and having a conversation. It didn't seem like I'm going to scream at the camera wrestling promo. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, especially the bit where Hall's like, at this point, nobody else would bring me in, but this little renegade company would. Like, I liked that there. It felt like truthfulness in what he was saying.
Yeah, and that took us really quickly into the heavyweight title match. It was 13 minutes into the show. We have the heavyweight title match between Scott Hall and Ron Killings. Truth is out. Did pretty much the same rap as he did last time. For some reason, they're trying to say that Mr. Wrestling 3 was probably Jarrett, even though Jarrett was out with Mr. Wrestling 3. Like, Mr. Wrestling 3 interfered in one of his matches, I believe. Also, Mr. Wrestling 3 was kind of fat and chubby, and Jeff Jarrett, to his credit, in pretty decent shape at this point. Scott Hall gave a I Love Lucy reference. God bless him. And let's see. I noted that, too, that this was really the first time they started to sit down and guess who Mr. Wrestling 3 might be. Before, it was like, oh, my God, who's this Ku Klux Klan looking guy? Now it's like, okay, you know, he's been coming out quite a bit. You know, let's try to get to the, you know, to this mystery. And again, that's to their credit. They're not like, you know, at other angles, they would have blown it up and figured it out within the third segment of the show. So, kind of a basic match. You can see the huge difference between like a match like this between the two heavyweights and the X Division, and that's not through the fault of Ron Killings. It's just Hall is just a little bit slower. This is not, you know, Razor Ramon of 94. Things are a little bit harder for his body. Killings comes back with a scissor kick, a really nice looking leg drop off the top rope. Crouch chanting overrated, which I still don't understand why they're doing that. I thought that Hall moved okay on offense, but he was really struggling to get up after taking a bump. And then Mr. Wrestling 3 comes in again, and I am 100% sure that this is not the same guy they used the last couple times. So that distracts. Scott Hall took care of him, unmasked him. You couldn't see who it was. He did have kind of brownish, mullety hair. And Truth just kind of gave him a front suplex and won the match, but we still don't know who Mr. Wrestling 3 is.
What'd you think about this match, Scotty? Because I have thoughts.
Your match time was 6:47, which is probably about as good a length as you're going to get. I will say Scott Hall was very lucid in that interview earlier in the day, so he didn't have to go into his bag beforehand. But he just, I mean, he's just slow and plodding, and
yeah,
it's just not
drunk.
This is not high. Right. He's not like Jeff Hardy slow. We're talking. He's just not in shape.
Yeah, it looked in pain. Almost, you know, I felt bad for him when he was getting off the ground. There were two points where he was just trying to get up after taking a bump. And I was like, oh, this isn't good.
No, it was not good. I agree. But, I mean, to Killing's credit, Ronnie, the truth there, he has been very exceptional as champion. He hasn't had a great match every week, but he's defended it proudly. And he's been a great heel. And I've liked everything I've seen so far from him. But this match, thank God it wasn't, you know, Jericho page length. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the old guy goes, outside of Six, I'd say Scott Hall probably gave the best effort when you're talking about Lawler and Hennig and guys like that. Because he was coherent and he was trying. The problem with Scott Hall in this match is his body was just shot.
Yep.
And so I thought the match was probably the best they could have done. And that speaks to me to a bigger problem on these shows, guys. And that's they really kind of undercut Truth's run as champion. Because the guy at the top is only as good as the people he beats, the people that put him over.
True.
And when you're getting put over by a bunch of 40 and 50-year-old guys, you know, no shade on 40 and 50-year-old guys, speaking as a guy in his 40s, but they should be...
Yeah, we're all right here for you.
They should
full
be mixing...
six-man tag team.
Yes, we the OC, the old club. Just nothing but Rogaine and... high balls for everybody.
High balls.
Old fashioned.
Just old fashioned. Yep, that's where I was going next. Just a bunch of madmen out here. But I think they've done a great job at building up the X division, but I wish they would integrate some of those guys into the heavyweight title picture, because we could have had some great matches with Truth and Lynn, or Truth and Low Key, or Truth and Styles. And the fact that Truth has been out here, you know, kind of on this Legends tour, so to speak, it's really hurt him, in my opinion, as your top guy.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you got, like, the specter of Jeff Jarrett just kind of leaning over his shoulder the whole time.
True.
That's finally starting to raise its head as well. After weeks and weeks of doing other things, now he's talking about the title shots again. So... speaking of, and we'll continue with this later on in the show, and I know it was announced earlier, Steve, there will be a number one contenders tournament to decide who will be for the world title, and that'll begin later on in the program. So Ron Killings retains the NWA championship. Steve, what do we got?
Well, we have Jeff Jarrett coming out. He says he's going to win the tourney, puts a bounty out on Mr. Wrestling 3's head, which generally, like, to me is like, yeah, bounty. But I just don't think it's going to pay off here. Hennig is accusing Jeff Jarrett of being Mr. Wrestling 3, which is really hard to swallow, seeing that he was just out like 3 minutes ago. And Jeff Jarrett just came out in his wrestling gear, all oiled up. So, and the guy looked nothing like Jeff Jarrett, but whatever. Now we got our tag team match, which has been building for the last 2 weeks. Another title match in the first hour. We got the Hotshots versus Not the Michaels Brothers versus Harris and Storm with America's Most Wanted tights, but... not called America's Most Wanted by either Jeremy Borash or Tanay or Don West. So it's like a slow transformation.
A painfully slow transformation. What are those weird names on the look at, and the font looked like Wu-Tang Clan. These big round letters. It was very funny.
It looked like Wu-Tang Clan, but like they went to Michael's and just
put Velcro.
They just got a piece of fabric, traced it with a pencil, like, and then cut it out, and then like put some double sided tape on it.
That's how the Michaels brothers got in this match, because they did such a great job with the tights. They're like, we'll give you guys a shot.
It just broke down immediately. I did like the start. Their Hotshots and Michaels were taking control on AMW. Like, or slamming them on the concrete, fighting along the ring. They had some cosplayers in the front row. One was dressed up as Mortimer Plumtree, which was kind of interesting, an interesting choice for a Mortimer to take on after just a couple weeks. Neither team was trying to win the belts at all. Tanay was just saying, well, they're not trying to win the belts. It's just they're trying to earn the respect of AMW. There had not been any tag at all. Harrison Storm started cleaning the house, taking on all four of them until one of the Hotshots, and I apologize, I will always mess them up. I'm going to do my best to figure out who's who, but did just a real terrible handspring elbow. This is where I think we're going to disagree, Scott. I thought this match was just chaotic, but not interesting, because there was just no structure. There was never any focus. Like even in battle royals, you know, going back to that battle royal in AEW, you know, like their battle royals aren't the greatest, but there's moments where you isolate two or three people to do a couple moves. And so like your attention's on them. But in this match, there was never that opportunity to pay attention to just one or two people, I think, until more towards the end, where Hotshots did some really cool double team moves. And then trying to think, did they take out the AMW one with their regular tag team finishing move?
Yes.
Is it the death sentence that's called?
Yeah.
I don't know if they called it that yet.
I don't think so.
But yeah, real cool move. It's like the 2019 version of the Midnight Express move. Mm-hmm. And just as pretty, you know, as shown, they did say the last couple of weeks that the church was coming back. Lights go off, and then it's not Orange Cassidy, unfortunately. It's Slash and Brian Lee.
No.
Freshy squeeze, primetime Brian Lee. Chokeslammed. Brian Lee chokeslammed one of the guys to the floor off the stage. It looked really awkward.
Yes.
And then, like, it was a, you know, another throwback to ECW, where Slash climbed up to the balcony and went through Storm, who was laying on the table. Not as impressive as New Jack, but also less likely to kill all your brain cells and require you to go around the ring asking if anybody's got coke, which actually happened at a show I was at.
That was later in the show.
It was an ECW show. New Jack was walking around the ring during his entrance and was asking around to see who had pot and who had coke during his entrance. And he wasn't joking. He was dead serious.
That is hilarious.
Yeah.
No wonder he almost went to jail.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I thought the match was a little sloppy. I still like AMW as champions, but
yes,
as good as the X division is right now, the tag division still needs some talent. And I think that's one reason why I feel like the match didn't have that. I mean, these other two teams are good, but I think we need some like real tag team talent. And maybe what happened at the end of the match helps that, Nate.
Yeah, I like the fact that they're in there with more athletic teams, teams that can kind of match what they do, and less of the big lumbering teams. And I actually like the closing angle. I would have loved it if it was for a team other than the New Church. But as New Church segments go, this is probably one of their better ones.
Yeah, where did the wall go? I forgot his church name.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, after he was baptized by
Malice.
James Mitchell.
Yes, Malice.
Yeah. Does he come back?
We are absent of Malice.
Great movie.
If they were smart, they would have built that his return up to a pay-per-view in Detroit, and then they could have advertised Malice at the Palace.
There you go.
Because we need a meta world peace for the whole show.
Mm. Yeah. I'm surprised he never got into wrestling.
He might hurt somebody. I did like, by the way, if you saw Dennis Rodman today, I think it was on First Take or whatever, and it said in his under his resume, former member of the NWO. I thought,
hey, once you join, it's for life.
It's for life. Right? That's right, Steve.
So AMW retains the tag team titles, but the tag division definitely needs a little meat in it to add some more credibility. Do we go backstage though, Steve, or do we dive right into
very briefly? Goldie is back with Barb Armstrong, with Don Harris sitting creepily behind them. And Bob Armstrong says that, hey, and it makes sense because there were some odd championship matches, and said, hey, you know, titles are going to be able to change hands on a DQ or count out now. And I don't disagree with that. You know, I don't mind that. But then he said, you know, to make sure that everything is fair, Don Harris is going to be the ref of the tournament.
Oh, God.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. Great. Especially since we go right to the ring and then it's Ron Harris against BG James. Like, yeah, this might be the literal worst possible matchup that TNA could put together.
As we all know, the Harris brothers like non-lethal force.
Yeah. Like, could there be a worse matchup?
Oh, this is awful.
Ron Harris and BG James? Like,
it's fucking awful.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at who was on the card. I mean, maybe Kurt Hennig versus Ron Harris.
Why would you put Ron Harris in this tournament at all? If there's anybody who doesn't deserve a fucking title match, it's this slob.
I think he had one singles win against pretty much a jobber, and that was it.
Yeah.
So Don Harris was, you know, working down the middle at first, but being aggressive, wasn't allowing any fists, but getting physically involved. Then all of a sudden you see Jeff Jarrett attacking Kurt Hennig in the back, which just shows like, hey, even they think this match sucks. I thought this was all fake blood. Did you guys think he actually
bladed? It was a lot of blood. I mean, it was a lot of blood.
Yeah.
I can't imagine blading so hard for this little backstage segment. And maybe he did. But like, I was like, man, is this fake? Maybe not. Go back to the ring, and James is complaining about a count that was fine. I don't know. It was a shit show. Like, Dad comes out, says Don Harris can't be the rep anymore because he's not being fair, and that he's protecting his son, and this was, I don't remember who won. I honestly don't. This was a negative star match. BG James won. I think it was a roll up.
Yeah, he rolled up.
They had a second ref come into the ring.
It was
within 3 minutes, you already blew your angle of Don Harris being the enforcer of the tournament. This was negative stars. This is one of the worst matches we've had that wasn't a dump match.
Yeah, it would have been better with Don West out there instead of Don Harris.
It would have been. It would have been. Yeah, Don gets all
better with Husky Harris.
Don gets all red faced, and he's got his, the silky deep shirt and tie, just getting all attached to him with the sweat.
The Regis Who Wants to Be a Millionaire outfit that you could buy at Kohl's. You knew neither guy was going to.
That's a good callback. Yeah, that was a legit thing that happened during the world. The Kohl's Regis Philbin collection.
Right. this was a, I mean, no one expected either of these guys to win this tournament. So if the match could have been at least serviceable, and it wasn't, it was fucking trash. It was trash. Might as well have the babyface win. Because if Don Harris goes one round for Ron, Don, whatever, one of the Grimm twins, it'd be a very grim tournament. utter garbage on this one. BG James should not be wrestling. He should not be wrestling. He looks like hell. He's not the only one on the show that looks like hell, but he looks like hell.
Yeah, there's not that. Like, it is seriously the worst match with actual wrestlers in it that we've seen.
Yeah. Anything, Nate?
No,
it's just like, I'm not even going to say anything.
This is just bad. Like,
it is.
And I don't remember when the switch turns. Maybe it's after Truth drops the title, but there's a switch where BG actually gets in shape and feels motivated, but we're not there yet.
No, but he doesn't look well. He doesn't look like coked up about to die. Well, he just is like in shitty wrestling shape. Well,
yeah.
Not like the guys in the next match. Steve.
Yeah. So we go from a negative star match to Jorge Estrada teaming with Priscilla against Ace Steel and Mortimer Plumtree. Mortimer says, of course I'm not going to wrestle, so out comes Miss Bruce. So immediately thought, oh great, here's the second negative star match in a row. And I feel bad for Jorge Estrada because I think that he has been one of the unsung heroes of this show. Every time he comes out, he puts on a great match. Not heralded at all. And even he did terrible on this. He had a great dive that took out Bruce, where he jumped over. Priscilla was being held by Bruce, and Estrada dives over the top rope, nails Bruce, doesn't even touch Priscilla. It was really cool. Bruce was doing a little bit more wrestling than he has in the past. Wasn't doing a lot of the comedy stuff, but it's, you know, turning into a handicap match, and Jorge Estrada is the face in peril because, you know, eventually you want to do a hot tag to Priscilla, of course. But Priscilla tripped Ace. And there's a Trip to Graceland move. I couldn't catch what that was exactly. I hadn't heard that name before. But Ace Steel came in, hit his finisher on Jorge, and then Bruce took the pin. And just to hammer home the point of, yeah, this is awful, Mortimer comes in and they put Priscilla over his knee and spanks her. Awful. Awful stuff.
Vince Russo right there. Mm-hmm. That was so Vince Russo right there.
Yeah, if you ever see something where it's like just completely humiliating a woman, you know that Vince Russo is most likely behind that.
Mortimer, bro, you got to balance her on your leg better, bro.
Gotta get you over her. But no, you have no reason to even have any sympathy for her whatsoever.
Listen, bro, if you want to make some cash, you got to slap some ass.
You have a cosplayer, bro. Wink at him.
Yeah, this whole thing was hot trash, too.
Yeah, just when you think you're getting away from things like this, they always seem, and it's not even they. Scott's right. It's him. It's Vince Russo.
It is.
Always wants to drag this stuff back and to the detriment of the show.
We thought we got rid of the Dub Cup and other such ilk.
Like, this would have been a good spot, you know, if you wanted to do a mixed tag, this would have been the place to put Paulina from Tough Enough.
I know her.
I thought she'd be in the next match, this match, yeah.
And Priscilla, do we know who she is? I've still been trying to figure it out. She's nobody famous, right?
I don't think so. I think she was one of the, and I might be wrong, but I think she was like one of the Cage girls at one time.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, that's what I had said too. And I was partially joking when I said it, but it could be.
Yeah, because I know, like, eventually, I think there's one of the Cage girls is named Lollipop, and I think eventually she wrestles.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, there's one or two Cage girls that eventually get in the ring, much like when the Nitro girls started wrestling, they achieve similar effect.
Yes, they do. But they should probably stick doing that, because this was abysmal. Speaking of abysmal, Steve, the hits just keep on coming, don't they?
Guys, I'm getting sucked into the history of the Impact Knockouts. Please make me stop.
Hey, I have a DVD on the shelf. That's even worse.
I'm mostly 2002, 2003, but I don't want to get spoiled here. So we got Jeff Jarrett versus the zombie form of Kurt Hennig, who comes out all, you know, whether it's fake blood or real blood. Stroke won in a minute. That was it. JJ attack security. So we have Jeff Jarrett and BG James have both advanced so far. Seriously, that was it. It was just a chair shot and a stroke, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
They also did announce at this point that there was supposed to be Six-Pac versus Lawler as one of the matches, but Six-Pac was hurt with a legit hip injury. So that will happen at a later date. I would think next week. It would be weird if it wasn't next week.
But I think they said next week.
Okay. But yeah, I mean, nothing really to say there.
Yeah. No, it's garbage. And Kurt Hennig literally looks like he's about to die.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not being funny.
The blood doesn't help.
No. And what's funny is, I mean, and Rotella walks by my desk today as I'm watching it, and he goes, wow, he didn't look like that 10 months earlier at the Royal Rumble. He looked awesome. Now he looks ill, and a different kind of ill than BG James.
How's Rotella looking?
He looks like BG James wearing Bruce's outfit. That's what.
Excellent.
Yeah. Great. He cosplays as Paulina, not on Tough Enough. guys, when Kurt Hennig should not be wrestling.
Yeah.
He needs help.
And we've said that for about three or four people on the show already.
I know. A lot of people need therapy.
And here's the thing. There could be a role for the, as Scott Hall says, the old guys that want to have fun. Like, there's a role for those guys, but it's not wrestling every single week.
No.
No, and he only has, 3.5 months to live here.
Mm.
Ugh. Sad.
Yeah.
Really sad. Anyway.
All right. So business picks up. business picks up now. Goldilocks back with Jerry Lynn. Says that revenge can be very satisfying, but he's got to be careful because they also bite him in the butt. And he's got a big match coming up against Sonny Siaki, a rematch, and it's also part of the tournament. We also have Sonny Siaki with Goldilocks, and he is a creeper. He's smelling her hair, blowing in her ear. It was took me back to kind of the dub stuff earlier on. It was just and Goldilocks was standing her ground at least on this one. It was just it was a little disgusting.
Yeah, to me, this is like one of the biggest instances of him trying to be the Rock and not having enough charisma to pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
Because even like all the creepy stuff, I think there's a way that Dwayne Johnson could make it work in character. But mm-hmm. Sonny Siaki doesn't have that it factor to make it work.
He does not. Nope.
Yeah, because Rock would make more silly jokes about it.
Yeah. It was playful, like, you know, the strudel stuff and then all that. Like it was playful, and you're like, okay, Rock, we could do without those lines. But you know what? We like you, so we'll let you get a pass. Sonny Siaki has not earned that pass, and this is like, he's less Rock playful, and he's more like Sam Shaw when Sam Shaw was in Impact and he was the stalker.
He's kind of rapey.
Yeah, like
very rapey. Frat boy rapey, like 2003 Randy Orton rapey.
Like Rock didn't just walk up on Lillian Garcia and start smelling her hair.
That would have been funny, actually.
All right, so let me see what else we got. So that goes right into the match, Siaki versus JL. Let me be careful. This is a longer match for them, so
15:08.
I don't want to get too much into moves and such, but the big storyline was Jerry kind of saying, "Hey, guess what? My knee is healed. I'm at 100%." And so Sonny didn't know what to do at first. Lynn just attacked. Both athletes here thought, hey, like we were talking about the X division and some of the heavyweight guys, but both of these guys are kind of straddling the line between heavyweight and junior heavyweight. They can, or X division, I'm sorry. They can go both ways. So Lynn's just unloading outside. West was talking about how Jerry Lynn and Sonny Siaki were kind of mirror images. And I didn't really understand what he was saying. But then when I thought about it, I thought, well, you know, like size and speed wise, they're fairly similar, kind of a similar style wrestling, but like the big age difference. Yeah. And then I thought to myself, why am I having deep thoughts about Don West commentary on 2002 TNA? Why? So then I questioned a lot of things, and then there were a lot of rest holds, so I was able to do that. Siaki did have cool strategy that they did say, like, hey, he was ready to work on the knee, so he can't. Now he's switching to the neck, so Siaki's improving as a wrestler. And I like that they got that across on commentary. Lynn makes his comeback, goes for the curl pile driver, which Siaki blocks, and we have to have our weekly ref bump. Siaki gets a chair, and Jerry Lynn kind of almost an RVD-style move that you'd see. This third ECW reference tonight, but like dropkick the chair into Siaki's face. There's no ref. Siaki DDTs Lynn in the chair, but Lynn kicks out. So then Siaki just puts his feet on the rope and gets the win. I mean, it made somewhat sense because the ref wouldn't see it because he was half out of it. It was I feel like I was sounding negative as I was going through this, but I actually kind of liked it. It was a 15-minute match. There was a little bit of dragging in the middle, but it was really good psychology for both of them. I wish we didn't need to have a ref bump. You could have done all the same stuff with the ref being there. I just think that they fall back on that every episode. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, I could be wrong, but I think this is the best Siaki singles match we've seen.
Yes,
I gave it about 3 stars. Afterwards, Jerry Lynn snapped and got him back, got his payback, and threw Siaki off the stage, which is what Siaki did to them originally. So it was a decent match. It wasn't great, but it was decent.
Yeah, it was solid. I think you're right in that it was probably Siaki's best match. They probably could have cut 5 minutes off of it, and it probably would have been even better. I think that my biggest thing with Siaki here is they're giving him a big spotlight. They're giving him, you know, the big push, having a guy like Jerry Lynn put Sonny Siaki over. But he's not really doing anything, or the creative team isn't giving him anything to do to set himself out apart from the pack.
I agree.
And especially like in this match, you know, there were times when you heard the crowd get on him, you know, calling him a rock ripoff. And it's like, you got, as a company, you already know that this guy is going to get those comparisons. So you can either go all the way into them and lean into it, or you can make him his own guy. And I think they're trying to play in the middle, and it's not, you know, being lukewarm is not, not working for the guy.
Yeah. It's a shame because he could have it, but they're not cultivating him as well as they should. And at least he won this match, though. So he moves on. This was a tournament match, by the way. So BG James, Jeff Jarrett, and Sonny Siaki have moved on in the tournament. And, of course, it was supposed to be Six-Pac against Brian Lawler. But since Six-Pac didn't wrestle tonight, Steve, Brian Lawler had something else to kill time with.
Yeah, they're backstage at first, and Lawler and April are all giddy. April is clearly playing Lawler. It's not even subtle.
No.
So they go to the ring, and basically Brian Lawler's trying to get heel heat. They're walking around the ring. A couple fans are saying something to him, but, you know, nothing. They're just goofing around. I watched this back twice because I wasn't exactly sure what happened.
Mm-hmm.
One fan said something to Lawler. Lawler just kind of spit his gum at him. The fan goes, "Come on, come on," and give him a little shove. And Lawler, you know, it looked like he warned him. And the fan was challenging him to step up. And the fan pushed him again. So Lawler, and this was a shoot. This was definitely 100% a shoot. Pulled the fan over the barrier. Just started waylaying him with punches and knees and just beat the shit out of him. Looked like he broke his nose. I mean, Lawler had his blood all over his fist. And then the security came and took the guy away. Not surprised that if it was going to happen to anyone, it would happen to Brian Lawler.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't surprise me. There's like there's nobody else that would have fallen for that. You know, falling into that trap.
Yeah, like, and I get, like, hey, don't put your hands on the wrestlers. This was taking it 10 steps too far.
Yeah,
like,
this is crazy.
Just push the guy down and get security to kick him out, you know? Or even just pull him over the guardrail and have security take him out. But, yeah, he's lucky he didn't kill the guy.
I don't know.
Yeah, it was a sucker punch.
Yep.
Yep.
On the plus side, though, this was the most interesting Brian Lawler segment to date.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
and the
true.
Most work rate.
And poor April had no idea how to react.
Mm-hmm. No.
I understand. I don't hold that against her. Like, she's like, is this part of the show? Is this? Am I supposed to be laughing because he's a bad guy?
She's like, this booking is really all over the place. No coherent stories being told.
Am I supposed to make out with this guy now?
Sure, why not? It's only Nashville. WWF's doing lesbian stuff right now, so
yeah. All right, let's get into this last match because this is where it's at.
Yeah.
We've been building towards this. This is
they
talked about it last week that this was going to happen, and it's Don West's boy, Amazing Red, versus AJ Styles, X Division title match, and you know, still with Mortimer Plumtree, which even. This is not spoiling anything. He didn't even do anything in this match, really. There was no, so it just shows there's no reason that he needs to be involved in AJ. Yep. AJ was enough of a heel on his own. He came back, you know, came out with that kind of, what you call, Scott, like that frat boy douche.
Frat boy douche.
And
Orton, yep.
This may have been the first time as we've watched these episodes where I was sitting there like, I am pumped for this match. I was excited. Yep. I was tired, and I'm like, nope, I'm pushing through. This is going to be great. There looked like there was a lot of time left. So, you know, I didn't think Jeff Jarrett was going to come out at the end of this one.
I know.
So this was right away back and forth, as you would expect with this kind of match, like a lot of arm drags back and forth. AJ kicked him, and then another back and forth, and Red kicked him. West legitimately was marking out for Red, and that's been one of my favorite parts of Amazing Red, is seeing how much Don West legitimately loves him. And I saw the TNAs later on when Red came back and Don West was his manager. And I was like, why? Why are they doing this? And then you see from 2002 that, boy, Don West really actually likes Amazing Red.
Yeah.
And he was screaming and yelling for him. And it's not the first time that that's happened. I can't even explain a couple of the sequences that happened. But one of the early ones that I loved was that Red kind of faked out doing a dive, flipped back in, got on the apron, and a Rana to Styles off the apron. But Styles blocked it. Styles looked like he was going to go for a Styles Clash on the floor, but Red blocked that, flipped back up to the apron, kicked him, and then got in the ring and did another dive. AJ, during the middle of the match, was doing a lot of power moves that we haven't seen him do because he's, for once, the bigger guy in the ring. And Amazing Red was, I mean, they think they said he was like 140 pounds, which that's how much I weighed in high school as a cross country runner. So
wow.
I couldn't imagine being a professional wrestler at that size. That AJ Styles inverted DDT that AJ's famous for, Red took that better than most people do. Sometimes that can look really sloppy. Amazing Red blocked another Styles Clash, which AJ then lifted him up into this just vicious powerbomb that squashed Red dead. So AJ's been in control. Red keeps getting a couple hope spots. Got a Red Star Press for two. And then here's another crazy sequence where he was going for Rana, went to a Styles Clash. Then Red got him for a powerbomb. Styles got him up in the powerbomb again. But Red hit this like really super fast, sharp Hurricane Rana. The fans, the announcers were going crazy. Hit a razor's edge to a DDT, and then Plumtree grabs the ankle, which was pointless. There was no reason for it. So looks like Red's going to do a super Hurricane Rana on Ace, on AJ to finish him off. But again, another block where AJ's going to turn into a second rope power bomb. But in midair, Red reverses it into this super fast Hurricane Rana.
Yeah.
There's a huge snap on it.
Yep.
And as they hit the ground, AJ rolls through, gets a sunset flip pin. Mm. This match was awesome. I give it 4 stars.
It was amazing.
I went and looked, did some research. I saw that Dave Meltzer gave it 3¾ stars. One of my favorite singles matches that we've seen. It lived up to the hype that I thought it was going to have, giving in. The 3 reversal sequences with the Styles clashes were just amazing. So crisp.
Yeah. It seemed like AJ was about to do a Styles Clash on the top rope, but then Red started punching him, and then he turned it into a powerbomb.
Yeah, yeah.
Hurricane Rana, roll-up combo. I mean, it was fucking amazing. The balance those two guys had, both on the top rope and in the air. It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. AJ is establishing himself as the face of this company. It's not Killings. It's not Jarrett. AJ is the guy that they're pushing as the face of this fresh promotion. He's almost like their Hangman Page, only better. and he wins matches.
So could AJ Styles at this point go on Ellen?
No.
No, not as the frat boy.
Scott Hall could go on Ellen. Kurt Hennig could fall asleep on Ellen. Yeah, what an amazing match, Nate. Amazing match for Amazing Red. I almost think that maybe they should have, fuck it, pulled the trigger like a Mikey Whipwreck style, and fuck it, have him win the title. Why not?
They switched it a bunch of times.
Yeah, that could have been perfectly fine. I think even in this loss, though, Red was elevated.
Yes, he was. I agree.
Because he was shown to be able to go toe-to-toe with AJ, hang in there, and the only reason that he lost was because AJ was able to think on his feet, no pun intended, and reverse that Rana into a roll-up. I enjoyed the match. Honestly, they could have taken that 5 minutes that I took away from Sonny Siaki and Jerry Lynn and put it on this match.
Yep, I agree.
And it would have been, I don't think it would have dragged one bit.
Or the 59 seconds of Kurt Hennig's work rate, and added that too.
You could have taken this. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, this, again, is another example of the amount of talent in this company and somebody like Amazing Red who is so underutilized. And so it's good to see him getting this spotlight. And you're right, Steve. I think with maybe anybody else, kind of the over-the-top homerism from the commentary table would feel out of place. But with Don West, it fit perfectly and it added to the match, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely it did. I was going to say, you could take this match as it were, maybe take out Mortimer Plumtree and lift it into 2019 and put it on like an AEW or put it on an NXT, because I don't think Red would really work on Raw or SmackDown. And
no, probably not.
It would fit in just perfect.
I agree.
Like you would not know that it was a 2002 match. So that it's like they're 16, 17 years ahead of their time.
Yep. I agree, 100%. So AJ Styles retains the X Division title. Before we wrap up, Steve, Don West does his usual scream at the fucking tent walls for the following week's card.
Yeah, I didn't even listen to that part because I was honestly jacked from the match, so it went right into that. And I'm like, I don't know. I know that there was there another Jarrett versus Hennig match going to be like the last one? Then they said Lawler versus Six Pac,
and Jerry Lynn. I don't know if this is from earlier in the night, but Jerry Lynn will get another X Division title shot.
Yes. Yep, against AJ. That was the big
BJ. BG James versus Sonny Siaki, because that's what the people want.
Well, that's the semifinals. That was in the brackets.
Oh, man. Is it going to be BG James versus Jarrett for the tournament win? We'll find out.
It's like, this is not, and here's the thing. This is not a real sport, people. You can do like Roger Goodell fixes things for the Patriots, allegedly. And you can put who you want to put in these matchups, in this bracket.
Right.
This is not the greatest songs of the 80s tournament where the people have the power. You have all the power, and what you're giving me the following week on this program is BG James and Sonny Siaki.
Yep. He's not going to sniff. Is Sonny Siaki going to sniff BG's dreads? If he does, he might find something in there.
That's that weed New Jack was looking for.
That's right.
You could even use the same eight guys and do Jerry Lynn versus X-Pac for your final. Have Six-Pac win and do Six-Pac versus Ron Killings. It would fit into storylines just fine.
And it'd be a good match.
It would be a good match. Jerry Lynn and Six-Pac have a history, so that would be fine.
How crazy is it, Steve, that we're lamenting the loss of Six-Pac in this tournament?
I know.
Yeah.
He was good.
He was in great shape.
Yeah.
It's because the main event talent is very thin right now. That's another. It's like the X Division.
Well, the problem, Scotty, is the main event talent is not very thin right now.
Oh.
Outside of Truth and Six Pac, nobody else. And Jarrett, nobody else is in wrestling shape.
No. And I wouldn't pass around any piss cups either. That's probably why they're all in TNA. Overall, I didn't hate the show. I mean, there was definitely stinkers, but I don't know. It was entertaining nonetheless. I mean, we've had better overall shows, but that was definitely the best main event we've had, and probably a top three match. Nate,
yeah, it's the problem with Vince Russo is that he can't help himself. He can have a great show and he can have these great performers, but he always manages to put his Vince Russo brand on it, which is why we got all of these old guys, which is why we got the mixed tag match and then some of the stuff that didn't need to be on the show, which drags the entire experience down. But yeah, I'd say the opening match was solid. The Lynn Siaki stuff was pretty good. And then the final match was great. So it wasn't a terrible show. We've seen much worse from this company. But outside of those three matches, there's really not, like, if you had to go back and look at something from this show, I'd check out those three matches and skip everything else.
Yeah, I agree. Wait, your final analysis, Steve. You seem to like the show, though, in general.
Yeah, I thought I really struggled with from the second segment until the second to last segment, it almost made me want to just quit. It was just boring is what it was. And then I was a little disappointed with the opener just because I expected more. You know, that really gets me psyched for the show is having that hot opener.
Yep.
But I was, yeah, I shouldn't be surprised by a Jerry Lynn match. Jerry Lynn and AJ are my two favorite wrestlers in this promotion.
I agree.
And that was a much better match for what it was. The Lawler incident was hysterical for all the wrong reasons. And then that main event was one of the best we've seen.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Well, in a month from now, episode 135, we will go to the following week and continue on in the tournament for number one contender. And then we get another AJ Jerry Lynn match, and we won't give you the spoil anything, but I have a feeling another barn burner's on the horizon.
Yeah.
Guys, great show. Great show.
Great shoe.
And really big shoe. Speaking of shoe.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Nate, how about that for an unintentional segue?
Brother, Nate, it was intentional.
Steve really needed the credit. Brother Nate, you have the shoe right now. So on our next episode, you will provide us with our next New Japan Classic match picks.
Yes. And we're going to do a retrospective on the best of BG James in New Japan.
Black tar.
Oh, you didn't know he was there?
Oh, you didn't know? I better get some heroin. No, I'm sorry. Anyway, so we'll look forward to that. We'll be back in 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, it'll be the week before the debut of AEW on TNT. So we'll talk about that. We'll analyze the TV stuff and looking ahead to what could be good on NXT, positives, negatives, etc., and anything else that strikes our fancy in the news and in wrestling. And again, Brother Nate will have our next New Japan Classic match picks. For Brother Nate, for Brother Steve, I am Brother Scott. You're in the main event. Enjoy Clash of Champions on Sunday, the two-woman power trip. I like the sound of that. See you in 2 weeks.
Hey, Steve Willie.
Yes, Nate Milton.
Did you hear about Becky Lynch and Charlotte going into this pay-per-view this weekend, Steve?
No, I didn't. They're not in the same match. What's going on?
Well, apparently, I know they're not in the same match, but apparently, and I got this on the dirt sheet, so your mileage may vary, take it with a grain of salt, but apparently they got into a backstage argument because their wrestling attire for the event was, you know, not coming together. And I think, according to Dave Meltzer, their outfits were going to clash.
1, 2. Bringing to the folk, Snoop Doggy Dogg and Dr. Dre is at the door, ready to make an entrance, so back on up, cause you know we're about to rip shit up. Give me the microphone first so I can bust like a bubble. Compton and Long Beach together, now you know you in trouble. Ain't nothing but a G-thang, baby. Too low, death niggas, so we're crazy. Death Row is the label that pays, man. Unfadable, so please don't try to fake this. But back to the lecture at hand. Perfection is perfected, so I'ma let them understand. From a young G's perspective, and before me dig on a bitch, I have to find a contraceptive. You never know, she could be earning her man and learning her man, and at the same time burning her man. Now you know I ain't with that shit, Lieutenant. Ain't no pussy good enough to get burned while I'm offended. And that's realer than real deal Holyfield. And now you hookers and hoes know how I feel. Well, if it's good enough to get broke off a proper chunk, I take a small piece of some of that funky stuff. It's like this and like that and like this and it's like that and like this and like that and it's like this and like that and like this and Drake creep to the mic like a fan. Well, I'm peeping and I'm creeping and I'm creeping.